Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
It's SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Good evening and welcome to the love fest that is Tell Me Everything. Coming at you live and interactive for the next 3 hours with some of our favorite guests on tonight. We bring this show to you with the most dangerous production squad in all of broadcasting, the great Chris Hauselt running this beast out of South Carolina, the mighty Thea Harper producing out of Brooklyn. I come to you from the Isle of Manhattan, and it's a pleasure to have you with us. It was a crazy, crazy day again. I think we're going to have to get used to these for the next few months, so I promise to talk y'all off ledges if you promise to talk me off mine. Where to begin on a day like this? Congressman Ken Buck out of Colorado said he's going to resign at the end of the week. At least Donald Trump's Congress knows how to shed some weight. Republicans will have 218 seats, the Democrats 213 seats after Ken Buck leaves. After losing Kevin McCarthy and Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio and then expelling George Santos and a Democrat got the seat, the Republicans can only lose two of their members on any given party line vote. It's going to be very, very interesting because Ken Buck did not tell the Speaker of the House, Trump's little Johnson, of his plans to quit. Also, you might have heard Special Counsel Robert Hur testified before the House Judiciary Committee today defending his report on President Biden and classified material found at his office in Delaware home. And it turns out the released transcripts show that Special Counsel Hur was not altogether honest about Joe Biden's memory and Joe Biden's ability to recall certain events. He had said that Joe Biden had forgotten when his son had died. The transcript revealed Joe Biden knew the exact date, but go easy on Robert Hur if you can. He's just a well-meaning, aging man with a poor memory. There was a settlement today between the state of Florida and multiple families of school-age children to bring clarity to Ron DeSantis's maligned Don't Say Gay bill. So Don't Say Gay is history. In other words, the DeSantis campaign officially ended today. Also, a whistleblower who for 5 years was a key witness in lawsuits and hearings over Boeing's aircraft production troubles, he was found dead in the parking lot of a Charleston, South Carolina hotel. Because Epstein'd is now a verb. And Haiti's prime minister has said he will resign. According to the New York Times, the country, as we reported last night, is in the midst of a spiraling humanitarian crisis marked by rampant gang violence. Also, the White House announced another $300 million in military aid to Ukraine. That is the first in several months. Oh, and by the way, I should say, the prime minister of Haiti, Ariel Henry, who was never elected, his post is going to be filled by a temporary transitional council. He's currently in exile in Puerto Rico as the violent gangs are controlling large amounts of the island. And also, in medical nightmares today, doctors in Florida discovered the source of one man's constant piercing headaches. He had tapeworm eggs in his brain, and they think this was the result of consuming undercooked bacon. Tapeworm eggs in his brain in Florida. And despite the obvious cognitive and health risks, that man will tonight clinch the Republican Party nomination for President of the United States. We're going to be joined by Professor Corey Brettschneider on the show tonight. Also, Reverend Barry Lynn will be here to talk a bit about Robert Hur. And Reverend Barry Lynn and I, we're going to have a fight tonight, Chris. I don't know if you know this. Barry Lynn did not like The Zone of Interest. And I think it's an amazing film. So we're going to throw down. As of a few moments ago, Joe Biden has clinched the Democratic Party nomination for president of the United States. And Robert Kennedy Jr. is considering offering either Aaron Rodgers or Jesse the Body Ventura to be his running mate. It's yours to blow, America. But I want to talk about something closer to home. Today is the 12th of March. 4 years ago tonight was the last time that Chris and Thea and I were in the studio together before everything shut down. 4 years ago today, my son turned 8 years old, and he had a little cupcake party in his second grade. And after that day, he never saw his classmates again. His school never reopened. 4 years ago today was when the lockdown began. And, you know, having all these warm, fuzzy memories made me think back to a few days ago when Elise Stefanik said something that I think is worth repeating. She, you know, Elise Stefanik, right? She went to Harvard and got elected to Congress and then decided she'd like to throw all her achievement away with blind obedience to a twice impeached game show host. Elise Stefanik is blinded by greed, which is like being blinded by hate, in that both of those things will make you really stupid. And she really wants to be vice president. Oh, she's trying so hard to be Trump's vice president. But because she's blinded by greed, which makes people stupid, she doesn't realize that Donald Trump would never pick a running mate from a state like New York that he's going to lose. But again, she thinks there's a chance because of reasons we've outlined here. So that's why a few days ago, she tried to echo Ronald Reagan from 1980 by saying this.
As Ronald Reagan famously asked us, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? The answer for hardworking Americans across the country is a resounding no.
There you have it. So tonight, let's discuss it, shall we, for this episode. Are we better off now than we were 4 years ago? A lady who thinks she's got a shot at being Donald Trump's vice president from New York, she thinks so. 4 years ago. 4 years ago, Donald Trump was justifying keeping people on a cruise ship and not letting them off because he didn't want COVID cases to go up. We don't talk about that enough. Donald Trump would have rather sacrificed the lives of those crew passengers than had the number of American COVID cases go up. Now, that's been largely forgotten because everything that came after it was so much worse. It was March 6th of 2020. We had that anniversary a few days ago. Remember this? Donald Trump visited the CDC headquarters in Atlanta. Remember that, when he went with his doctor friend who had the beard but no mustache and looks the same upside down as he did right side up? What was that guy's name again? Well, you remember what I'm talking about. So he went to the CDC and he said a lot of things. The pandemic was already a pandemic in Europe, and he more or less said he had a natural ability to understand the coronavirus because his uncle taught at MIT. And he reiterated again that people with COVID on the cruise ship docked near San Fran should stay on the boat, because if they came ashore, it might be bad for his reelection campaign. So it was shortly after noon Eastern time, 4 years ago yesterday, the World Health Organization declared COVID a global pandemic, and the world began to shut down. I'll never forget, I was there with Thea Harper, because it was Thea's first week on the job. I mean, you'd think it's bad enough she has to work with me and Chris. I mean, think about this poor woman. She comes to work at SiriusXM, and they put her with these two Gen X refugees who are constantly talking about classic rock and 90s hip-hop and obscure bad comedy films. And suddenly, like, her second day on the job, third day on the job, Thea and I were on the over there on the 36th floor of the Howard Stern Tower, getting ready for the show, when we heard the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic. And I thought, what does that mean? Well, we all learned what that meant. Stocks plummeted. In a span of about an hour, the entire American society and economy were thrown into chaos. So are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Well, let's talk about March 12th, 2020. On that day, schools around the country began locking their doors. I mean, our son had his cupcake party, never saw his classmates again. Offices were abandoned. People cleared out everything off the grocery store shelves. People were hoarding toilet paper and cleaning supplies. You couldn't find hand sanitizer anywhere. I remember the day I found hand sanitizer in like April or May at a small drugstore in New York City. I felt like I had just discovered the Grand Canyon. Everybody began putting masks on. The NBA announced it had canceled the rest of its season. And over the next few months, we saw what happened. Millions of us struggled with the effects of isolation and quarantine. A lot of people didn't do too well, but people got sick. People didn't know what to do. People believed Donald Trump and thought it was just like the flu. Morgue trucks became a common sight in big cities. I remember biking past the hospital my child was born in and seeing those large freezer trucks right outside. Funeral homes had backups and made waiting lists, and people had to wait sometimes years for an actual formal funeral for their loved one. On January 22nd, Trump had said, "We have it totally under control. It's one person coming in from China." On February 27th, he had said, "It's going to disappear one day. It's like a miracle. It'll disappear." By April of 2020, the unemployment rate was up to 14.8%. And by the end of 2020, you guys remember, hospitals had run out of beds. Nurses and doctors were on the verge of collapse. The annual increase in American deaths was the highest in 100 years, according to the Census Bureau. The death toll in America in January of 2021, the month that Trump finally left office and ended our 248-year tradition of peaceful transfer of power, January 2021, 95,000 Americans died that month. 4 years ago today, however, the former host of Celebrity Apprentice was saying COVID was just the flu, it was going to go away. Like a miracle, it'll just disappear. The numbers were fine until we started testing everyone. Slow down testing. If you don't test, you don't have cases. The vaccine rollout began in December of 2020, and it continued into the spring, but new variants kept popping up, and there were conspiracy theories and hesitation, and the rollout was too slow to save a lot of people. Donald Trump had no plan whatsoever to distribute the vaccine. He just wanted to take credit for it, but he didn't want to be seen getting the shot. It was madness. By January of 2021, we lost 75,000 people in 1 month. I'm sorry, 95,000 people in 1 month. And the pandemic would eventually claim the lives of more than 1.1 million Americans. That's way beyond the average of every other developed country. The unemployment rate was up to 15% 4 years ago. Got down to a little under 7% by the time Trump left, because we spent trillions in bipartisan stimulus spending that increased the deficit by 200%. Now, COVID's confirmed death toll, more than 7 million souls taken from us worldwide. That's scary, but the true toll is even scarier. The Economist is a magazine that still keeps a running estimate of the excess deaths, defined as the number of deaths above what we would have expected had there not been COVID and the pandemic. The global total around the world is currently approaching 30 million. 30 million more people are dead than should be. And among the high-income countries, America had one of the highest COVID death tolls. For a while, we were number one in death, number one in infections, number one in hospitalizations. Brown University had a study that noted recently, our death toll, our excess death rate, was much higher than Canada, Britain, Germany, France, Spain, Sweden, Denmark, Japan, South Korea, or Australia. Why? Many reasons, but the short version is the Donald Trump administration had no coordinated response to a pandemic. And I knew things weren't going to go well. I mean, right away. Do you remember early in the days of the pandemic? I knew we were in trouble when you started seeing people wanting to ban Corona beer. Yeah, that was it for me. Like, okay, they wanted to respond to a novel coronavirus by banning Corona beer. That's when I knew, friends, it wasn't going to go well for us. You know what? When I was a kid, you would drink beer to get stupid. In the age of Trump, people weren't drinking beer because they were already stupid. Why did we do so badly? Well, let's talk about, are we better off now than 4 years ago? 4 years ago, the pandemic playbook that the Obama administration had left, and by the way, successfully implemented when Ebola hit our shores, was discarded. They didn't care. They didn't use the pandemic playbook. And our medical system is already broken and shockingly expensive and not prepared for a mass health crisis. Not on the local level, not on the state level, not on the national level. Nobody could get COVID tests in the beginning. The initial distribution was not coordinated at all, and we did not protect our most vulnerable people because we saw what happened with our elderly and nursing home residents. And yeah, both parties can get some blame for that, absolutely. But a fish rots from the head down. How many people would still have their families intact if Donald Trump had taken the pandemic seriously and not made mask wearing a wedge issue, not refused to be photographed getting his inoculation? How many Americans would still be with us? You got to remember, it was January 28th of 2020, the phone call with Bob Woodward. when he confided that the COVID virus was airborne. And he said, it's a killer. And then he told everyone to fill the pews. Once they found out it was mostly affecting black people at disproportionate numbers, that's when Reopen America began. And Trump told everyone to go and fill the pews on Easter Sunday 2020. Remember that? You know, I always thought Easter was about coming back from the dead, not sending people to it. Recall, the vaccine was approved weeks after the election. But he didn't care about getting the vaccine to people. He cared about keeping his power. 1.18 million Americans have died from COVID. 15,141 people are still being hospitalized every week with COVID. 6 million plus have been hospitalized with COVID. They think about 17.5% of adults have had long COVID. 22% of adults aged 18 and older and 13.5% of children have received the updated booster. That's it. 9,655 children developed MISC linked to COVID, and black Americans are nearly two times more likely to be hospitalized with COVID than white Americans. During the week of March 2nd, this year, there were 576 deaths a week. That's the lowest number recorded since last summer, and much lower than the 25,974 weekly deaths recorded in January 2021, when Trump was still president. Under Trump, vaccine access disproportionately favored white, urban, and wealthy people, and a lot of low-income and minority Americans were left out of the process. And we have to address that the Biden administration really solved these access gaps in 2021. They went out of their way to make sure that vaccines were easily available in rural, non-white areas. But a lot of Americans, especially our conservative friends, were terrified, refused to be vaccinated. As of today, more than 30% of Republicans have not gotten a single COVID vaccine shot. Less than 10% of Democrats have avoided getting any. 4 years ago, we began being stuck in our house, terrified of this virus. 4 years ago, I got this little Comrex machine I'm still using to broadcast from home. 4 years ago, Donald Trump failed to respond to the early part of the pandemic, and people had to ration food and toilet paper and lost their jobs and were stuck on lines at food banks that went for hours. The economy took the biggest hit since the Greatest Depression, and Donald Trump couldn't stop lying to everyone who voted for him and everyone else. People died horrible deaths, gasping for breath because their lungs were filled by a replicating virus, dying on stretchers and hospital hallways. And Trump kept lying about how serious it was. There were so many dead bodies that cities had to rent trailers to stuff the corpses in. So I'm better off than 4 years ago. How about you? Because right back then, we had a president for the first time in American history who conspired to overturn the election based on a lie to keep power, against the Constitution, against the peaceful transfer of power that goes back to John Adams, which led to a terrorist attack on the U.S. Capitol by his deluded Confederate supporters. Donald Trump had said if 100,000 people died of COVID, then he had done a good job. Over 350,000 people died of COVID in the last year of his term. And he said explicitly, he told Bob Woodward on tape, he downplayed the risks. And then Trump and his wretched family got vaccinated in secret, wouldn't allow themselves to be photographed doing it, and didn't admit it for weeks after. It was only after they left the White House staff revealed they'd all gotten their shots. Remember when Trump designated Pence as the point person for COVID? And then Donald Trump didn't like that Pence was on TV every day, so he took over the briefings, and that's how he got the put UV light in the lungs and inject disinfectant nonsense? The fact that Trump participated in a debate with Joe Biden knowing at the time he had tested positive for COVID and his entire team, including his wretched family, lied about it? Where are we now? Well, that recession they all told us was going to happen last year never happened. Our inflation is declining faster than any of our allies. We are doing better than any G7 nation at recovering from COVID inflation. Economic growth has improved. The major stock market indexes hit all-time highs. Donald Trump came into office riding Obama's recovery and then ran the country into the ground with shitty decisions and a terrible economic agenda. And Joe Biden, this old man, has for all intents and purposes fixed it. Employers created a record 14 million jobs in 3 years. That's almost 500,000 per month. I mean, that was 176,000 jobs per month employers created under Trump in his first 3 months in office. And then the pandemic led to a loss of 20 million jobs. So it's not even a rebound. The new jobs are higher than the pre-pandemic levels under Trump. The uninsured rate got better under Biden. The supply chain challenges got better under Biden. The cost of many prescription drugs got better under Biden. Student loan debt forgiveness. Infrastructure got better under Biden. The deficit got better. The crime rates got better. And domestic manufacturing got a lot better. And it's going to keep on getting better. Our unemployment rate's been below 4% for 2 years. That's the first time that's happened since the 1960s, brothers and sisters. I mean, Black and Hispanic unemployment rates have seen historic lows. So, yeah, that's the answer, Elise Stefanik. We're doing substantially better. And if Republicans are going to try to sell Trump 2.0 by asking if we're better off now than 4 years ago, they'd better hope their memory loss is as contagious as COVID was. We want to know what you guys think. We're at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with your calls. And Professor Corey Brettschneider, this is SiriusXM Progress. Don't go away.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
And we are back. And yes, thanks for your nice messages. It was my child's eighth birthday 4 years ago today. So yeah, he turned 12 today. We just had a great pizza party here. My son shares a birthday with Daryl Strawberry of the New York Mets and the New York Yankees, who just had a heart attack over the weekend. He seems to be recovering quite nicely. Happy birthday also to everyone my child shares. Like, I share a birthday with Charlie Sheen. That's it. But my son Henry shares a birthday with Liza Minnelli, Edward Albee, Mitt Romney, James Taylor, Ron Jeremy, Marlon Jackson, Daryl Strawberry, Courtney B. Vance, Jake Tapper. I mean, yes, I know. Ron Jeremy shares a birthday with Mitt Romney, in case you still believed in astrology. Yes, Mitt Romney and Ron Jeremy, that gigantic overexposed penis. And Ron Jeremy, they share a birthday. We're at 866-997-4748. We're going to be joined very shortly by Professor Corey Brettschneider. Right now, however, let's talk about the House Judiciary Committee, because today, as you know, they welcomed Robert Herr for a lengthy cross-examination of his report on classified material stored in Joe Biden's office and home. Now, it caused a lot of fireworks, because as you guys probably know, Robert Herr's report on his report was belied by some different evidence in the transcript. He lied, it appears. Here, Herr tells the committee he did his job and he did it right. Give a listen.
My task was to determine whether the president retained or disclosed national defense information willfully. That means knowingly and with the intent to do something the law forbids. I could not make that determination without assessing the president's state of mind. For that reason, I had to consider the president's memory and overall mental state and how a jury likely would perceive his memory and mental state in a criminal trial. These are the types of issues that prosecutors analyze every day. And because these issues were important to my ultimate decision, I had to include a discussion of them in my report to the Attorney General. The evidence and the president himself put his memory squarely at issue. We interviewed the president and asked him about his recorded statement. Quote, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. He told us that he didn't remember saying that to his ghostwriter. He also said he didn't remember finding any classified material in his home after his vice presidency. And he didn't remember anything about how classified documents about Afghanistan made their way into his garage. My assessment in the report about the relevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate and fair.
Now, Madeline Dean, the great congresswoman out of Pennsylvania, she asked him if he wanted to correct the record about the claim that Biden couldn't remember the date of his son Beau's passing. She really called him out for inaccurately saying in his report that Biden couldn't remember the date of when his kid died. And the transcript shows he remembered the month and the day. A lot of events like that. And I'm torn by it. Chris and I were talking about this earlier. On the one hand, these hearings are theater. They're just people performing for the cameras. But it's been that way since the days of McCarthy, right? I think it was important, however, because a lot of lies have been allowed to permeate for months. A lot of media organizations deserve to write a lot of retractions saying that Biden was too old and senile to remember when his son died. I mean, that was spread all across the world. So Democrats were furious that Mr. Herr included these lengthy descriptions of Joe Biden's memory lapses in the report that ultimately said the president shouldn't be prosecuted. He's too senile to prosecute. And the polls show the Democrats are hearing these sort of things and they're worried about his age. And because he is 81 and has a stutter, you know, he fumbles in public sometimes. But the transcript of his interviews with her showed that there may have been a couple of lapses or forgetting things, but not that his son was dead. They came out and openly lied about it. Now, Republicans were even more mad at this guy than Democrats because they were furious he didn't bring criminal charges against Biden. But the fact is, Biden cooperated with the investigation. He didn't violate a subpoena. He didn't lie multiple times. He didn't order his staff to hide sensitive documents from government investigators. In other words, Biden, like Pence, screwed up and apologized and sent everything back. Trump was engaged in elaborate theft and fraud. And Herr's testimony didn't give Republicans anything new to work with today. I mean, nothing in today's proceedings made Joe Biden look worse than what we already heard. And Biden's not on trial, but Trump is. And that's what's important. So let me bring it to our next guest. We have a lot to cover with the Herr testimony today and a lot of fireworks that we're going to be playing for you throughout the evening. Right now, however, I really am glad to bring back to the show Professor Corey Brettschneider, who you know from his articles in Politico, The New York Times, and Time. He is one of the sharpest writers on the Constitution we've got, and he is a wonderful professor in the Poli-Sci Department at Brown University. You should own his book, The Oath in the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents. It is an essential read before this election. And it makes a wonderful gift for anyone in your life who cares about democracy. Professor Brettschneider, it's so good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thanks, John. Looking forward to talking to you as always.
Well, thank you, Professor. Thank you. It's so good to hear from you. So I want to begin by talking about Joe Biden's promise the other night in his, I thought, rather effective speech. I'd love your thoughts on the State of the Union. But one of the things he promised he would do would be to restore Roe. If you give me the Democratic majorities I need, I'll do it. And I want to begin on a constitutional level by asking you, what does that mean and what would that look like?
I did, in the broad sense, think it was a great speech. He showed a lot of energy. He countered the critics who were worried that he's been, you know, lackluster, that age is an issue. And the best way to do that was to have the you know, vitality that he really showed in the speech, the back and forth with his opponents, the face he made, of course, at Marjorie Taylor Green, all of those, I think, helped set up the big ideas that he really also defended. And look, you know, this abortion is a constitutional issue, but it's also a winning issue for the Democratic Party. And what we've seen out of Alabama, what we've seen from Republicans, suggests that they're walking right into the issue that could really make the difference in the election. Now, to your question, what can actually be done? Because the Supreme Court said there's no right to an abortion, and you might think, you know, that's the end of it, absent packing the court or something like that, which Biden's shown no interest in, even though, you know, we've talked about why that might be a good way to go, a legitimate
yes,
way
sir.
To go.
Just so threatening it would be a good way to go.
And he's been campaigning under the banner of Restore Roe on campaign stops, and then we saw it in the speech, too. Is, you know, he's vague about it, but I think the idea is that Congress at his urging, especially if the Democratic Party could retake the Congress that would be necessary to do this, would pass a law saying, codifying Roe versus Wade, saying that there is a national right to have an abortion and making illegal all of these state efforts to get rid of it. So it used to be that the Supreme Court said that the Constitution requires this right. They no longer are saying that. They're leaving it up to the states after the Dobbs opinion. But what he's proposing is, okay, you know, Congress also has a role in saying what the Constitution means. In fact, there's an enforcement provision of the 14th Amendment called the fifth section of the 14th Amendment says Congress is supposed to pass laws to protect the rights of the 14th Amendment. And so if mm-hmm. the right of due process includes the right of liberty, includes the right of abortion against the states, well, then it's Congress's role to do that. So that's the idea.
The Americans who believe that abortion should be accessible without restrictions is going to be probably the most important demographic for the entire Democratic Party for the rest of the year. But, I mean, let me quote the president specifically. If you, the American people, send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, I promise you I will restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again. So, Professor, could a statute passed by Congress to reinstate Roe work? I mean, if he got the votes and had... I guess, would he need a 60-vote threshold in the Senate? And if he had these miraculous numbers, could it be a lock? Could they do it?
They could, you know, right. You have to get past the filibuster rule or cloture rule. Another issue, I guess, is whether to get rid of, if the Democratic Party wins, to get rid of the filibuster altogether, which I think would actually be a good thing. There's nothing in the Constitution that requires it. And this would be the issue.
There's not going to be a mansion in cinema no matter what next year, Corey. There'll be no mansion in cinema come January,
right,
regardless of how it shakes out.
Thank God. And, maybe getting rid of the filibuster or getting the 60 votes required in the Senate would lead to this legislation. Now, the problem is certainly they could do it. They could write it and pass it, and he could sign it, and he would sign it. But now the real question will be, and this will be the next frontier, is the Supreme Court going to come and say that there's no constitutional power on the part of Congress to do that? That'll be, you know, the epic battle to come. One of the arguments is the 14th Amendment gives Congress the power. A lot of congressional power comes from the Commerce Clause. But I just have to believe that, you know, there's certainly several justices, Clarence Thomas among them, who might say, no, there's no such power to enact this legislation. And in fact, we saw Thomas say something kind of interesting, which is that he's indicated either way there's no right to legislate on abortion by Congress. So there was a partial birth abortion law, of course, that you'll remember that we were discussing a lot a number of years ago. And Thomas, in a case about whether that was a constitutional law, the court actually upheld it. But he said in his opinion, well, I'm not sure that Congress has the ability to have the power to even regulate at all on abortion. But no one brought that up. It's the way that he puts it in the opinion. So he's sort of laying the seeds for if there was a national protection saying that there is no power. Now, so yeah, I have no doubt that's one vote. So what about five? You know, they've claimed in the Dobbs opinion that this is about democracy. That's the point of it, and that they don't want the courts to be involved in it. So that part of it cuts in favor of the idea that, yeah, they'd leave it alone. But we know that they also have, I think, a not-so-hidden agenda to protect what they regard as the fetus's right of life. So how much would that feed into an argument about whether Congress had this power to pass laws or not? And there's another dynamic, which is that many of the justices really are trying to eviscerate congressional power under the Commerce Clause of the 14th Amendment. So all those factor into the possibility that, yes, they could say this law, even if we were able to get it, would be unconstitutional.
I'm trying to remember the Dobbs ruling, Professor, but am I mistaken in thinking that the Supreme Court indicated that you'd have to have Congress do this? Like in their ruling that they said the way you could have abortion rights back? I mean, is it conceivable that Joe Biden could somehow miraculously have a great turnout and get 60 votes in the Senate and codify Roe, and then the Supreme Court would go ahead and overrule the Congress and the will of the voters?
I think they definitely could do that. And so I know there are some votes to do it. There are some votes to say Congress has limited powers and it doesn't have this power. Now, as you say, in the Dobbs opinion, it's all about democracy. let the states decide, or one interpretation of it is let Congress decide. But what they're actually going to do, you know, that's this court is just again and again shown itself to be unreasonable and to really be taking the side of the, you know, the fetus, the idea of the fetus's either constitutional personhood or something close to it, even though they never say that explicitly. I have to believe that's in the background of several of the justices' ways of thinking. So, you know, what does the Constitution require? I think it certainly requires a right to an abortion, and it certainly allows Congress to protect them. But what this court is going to do is such a different beast altogether. And so I'm trying not to make a prediction. I'd put it at 50-50, I guess, that it would be, you know, one of the great cases to come is the follow up to Dobbs that asked whether or not Congress could even do this. And there's a very good chance that they would say, no, Congress cannot.
Now, of course, Professor, right now, the Congress is taking 2 months to decide if America has a king. In the case of the Donald Trump immunity defense, they're you know, the founders really missed that. I don't know if you know that, but they really hated this one person. They wanted an absolute ruling monarch. And so Donald Trump is trying to keep the dream alive. And for some reason, the Supreme Court needs 2 months to decide if they can give a ruling on this, to really think about it hard. But it's getting wackier. Donald Trump is now trying to raise the immunity defense in his upcoming, as in March 25th, New York case for election interference, the Stormy Daniels case. This is something that happened before he became president. Right. It doesn't concern any official presidential duty, and yet he's trying to tie this in to his cockamamie nonsense immunity case. Is this just a statement of how terrified he is and how strong Alvin Bragg's case may be?
Or, you know, how good a strategist he is, unfortunately. Like, what a ridiculous argument that he's immune from prosecution even when he's not president. And we've talked endlessly about what that would lead to, the idea that, you know, if the president was acting in his official duties, he could commit any crime and have impunity forever. So Trump's move is not to win. It's to delay, delay, delay. And so all he's got to do is get over the threshold of trying to tie together his immunity argument in the Bragg case to his very far-fetched, this is a way far-fetched, to his slightly less far-fetched argument that he's immune for all official acts. Now, you know, I don't know. I think that it is, for the reasons that you gave, just so ridiculous, because he has a semblance of an argument in the January 6th case, which is that he was acting in the pursuit of his official duty when he, you know, basically sparked an insurrection. But what's the argument here? I don't even really get it. It's, you know, he wasn't even president. There's no way that was his official duty as president. He was trying to become president. You know, that's true. But I don't think that, you know, we want to give any candidate for office like the, you know, the vaccine denying Kennedy immunity simply because he's running for office. It would be the ultimate incentive for every quack to commit crimes and run for office. So I don't really see how a court could go along with this. I mean just,
it's, you it's
know,
nonsense,
trying
right?
To like see what sticks, I guess.
When you hang out with smart people, I hang out with riffraff and comedians. You hang out with smart people. When you're hanging out with your colleagues and peers, do any of your colleagues and peers think there's any kind of weight to this immunity defense? Or is it just generally acknowledged that this is some horse shit, just a delay? I mean, it's so stupid, Professor. It's so stupid. Does anyone think it's not?
Well, it's certainly in the Vance case, I think. There's no disagreement. It's ridiculous. He was not president, so how could he get an immunity defense? There is this case that helps him in the January 6th case, as much as, again, I want to say no way should the Supreme Court do this. It is ridiculous. It is a kind of monarchy that they would be glorifying. But, you know, let's get real. This court, you know, follows a sort of common law tradition and an originalist tradition which sees the president is having lots of powers that normal people don't have. The idea of the unitary executive turns the presidency into not a monarch, but into some residual powers, certainly, of the monarch. And one of them, that side of things that unitary executive theory tends to push, is the idea that there are immunity for official duties, certainly while president. And, you know, that's become mainstream. The Department of Justice has said that during the Nixon administration and said it as well during the Clinton administration. So that's the, to my mind, wrong, but definitely part of the legal tradition, the idea that sitting presidents have immunity. What about former presidents? That's what we're talking about now. There is this case called Nixon versus Fitzgerald, and all bad things trace back to Richard Nixon when it comes to the presidency. And Nixon won that case. He fired for political reasons a subordinate. The subordinate sued, and the Supreme Court said, look, presidents for civil actions, private actions, are immune as long as they were acting within the outer perimeter of their official duty. And what Trump
Whatever
is really doing
means.
Here is he's saying, okay, that's the law. And so if you have immunity for official actions when it comes to civil cases, you should also, former presidents should have it for criminal cases as well. Is that a winner before the Supreme Court? I certainly hope not, but if you're going to get a couple of votes, I think so.
Corey, I could talk about this all day. It's endlessly fascinating to think that they're arguing that Joe Biden should be allowed to assassinate Donald Trump with SEAL Team 6 and then assassinate as many any Republican senators who try to impeach him and then leave office unimpeached so he can't be tried. It's brilliant. But while I have you, I've got to ask you about the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025. I know you've been thinking about this a bit, and it's their policy playbook for the second Trump administration. Remember back in the day when Heritage was embarrassed of Trump? I remember doing an event for Bill Gates with one of the heads of Heritage Foundation, and she was so embarrassed what Donald Trump was doing to the party. Now he's their hood ornament on their car. And I wanted to ask you your thoughts on Project 2025, because it's starting to really gain some traction, and I would like it to become extremely famous. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worrying that, you know, for a long time we've been stressing that Donald Trump is not a conservative. He's a nationalist who wants to crack down on non-white people. His travel ban was an example of that. His claim that Mexico is not sending, as he put it, their best people. They're sending us rapists. The escalator speech, that gross nationalism should be rejected by liberals and conservatives alike. But that's not how the Heritage Foundation is playing this. They really are wrapping themselves in the banner of Trumpism and doubling down on the anti-immigrant sentiment. And they're doing it with nicer sentences and without the crudeness of some of Trump's speeches. But that's a really frightening thought, that some of the, you know, so-called legitimate institutions on the right are really embracing Trumpism in a way I think they didn't in the first term. And they want to play a role here. They know what he likes, and they're making themselves relevant. And
they're finding common ground. I mean, they want to dismantle the administrative state. They want to get rid of the Department of Justice. And Donald Trump likes breaking shit. So it seems like it's, you know, but it's still, I mean, when you think about what this would mean for high skilled immigrants, and you know, how they want to end refugee programs, they want to kill DACA, they want to terminate legal status for Ukrainians. Where's their money coming through? They want to block visas for temporary agricultural workers, which to me sounds like they want to jack up the prices of produce. I mean, it's madness, but I guess we should be grateful that they put out their own aggressive wet dream agenda so the rest of us can see what we're up against if Trump wins.
Yeah, it makes it transparent, and we can also not just cast stones at Trump, but cast them where they belong, which is in these so-called legitimate institutions with lots of academics. And, you know, let's not forget, too, that Trump drew from the Claremont group, for instance, John Eastman and others who saw themselves as legitimate conservatives who not only went along with the insurrection, but helped design it in the case of Eastman. And we're seeing more and more of that, that he is winning over. You know, there's the Bill Kristols of the world who are refusing to do anything to be complicit. And then there's the Heritage Foundation and Claremont group and others who are really embracing it. And, you know, it's frightening because they speak a language that sounds more legitimate than him, but it's as hate-filled. And let's talk, too, about their desire to get rid of legal immigration. This is a nation that's welcomed people, you know, for the 20th century has been about legal immigration into the United States and building our identity through multiculturalism. And when I read that 2025 agenda, it's all about white nationalism. And yeah. You know, you can read right through it. And yeah, it's grotesque.
They literally, I mean, part of it is they want to block any federal financial aid to students at colleges that offer in-state tuition to DACA holders. I mean, it's madness. And this is coming out right around the time that Trump is promising to take all federal funds away from public schools that require vaccines, because I guess they want more chickenpox.
Yeah, I've had conversations with administrators about this, in particular during the first Trump administration, and saying, you know, what are you going to do if he says he's going to take away all your federal funds unless you release the name of undocumented students? And you want to believe that they'd say no way. And, you know, most of the people of conscience that I've talked to said, you know, they'd rather resign than go along with that. But mm-hmm. They also said, but let's be real. You know, there's a lot of money at stake here. And these institutions are often conservatives. And even if a few people resist, many people won't. And if those people resist, they might find themselves fired, because boards of directors are not going to be happy about losing federal funds. So there's a huge operating budget comes from the federal government for most universities.
That's right. Professor
and
Brett Schneider.
President, whoever this next president is going to have a lot of power. And if it's somebody as pernicious and disgusting as Trump, he might know how to use it this time.
We got to hit a hard break, Corey. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone, follow Professor Brett Schneider at Brett Schneider C on the Twitters. We'll see you next week. We'll be right back with your calls. This is Progress.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is SiriusXM Progress. We're going to be joined very shortly by the Reverend Barry Lynn, but we're going to be talking more about the Robert Herr testimony today. Again, Democrats had their guns out for him. Republicans had their guns out for him. I think the Democrats had a better day. Not sure. Republicans will get a lot farther, having videos of Matt Gaetz screaming at the guy on Fox News all night, but they didn't get anything they wanted from him. They didn't get him to say that Joe Biden was guilty of any crimes. And all they're trying to do is make it seem, well, they're trying to do what Trump's trying to do, to make it seem that what Joe Biden did is exactly what Donald Trump did. And again, as we will discuss, it is not. But let's go to the phones really quick, if we could. Lisa in New Mexico, thank you so much for waiting on hold. You're on Progress. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, John.
How you doing? Hi, what's up?
Can I ask Chris a question real quick?
Yeah.
Chris, you're Gen X.
Oh, you want to ask Chris a question. Chris, you're being summoned.
Go ahead.
Are you Gen X?
I'm on the edge. I'm very
late. Yeah, he's on the cusp. I group him there. I misidentify him.
I was born in 78, so I'm very late Gen X, very early millennial. They call us Zennials.
I'm sorry if I misdemographed you, Chris. I'm sorry. Demographic to you. I apologize.
Okay, well, you know what? We're in Cougar Range. We're in Cougarville. So, Chris, I'm going to leave my man. We're going to get married, all right?
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, my. Okay. Oh. Should I leave?
John, you're going to pay. John, you're going to pay, right?
I'll pay. I endorse all of this, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, yay.
I hope you can handle the house elf. You'll be moving sideways with this guy. I hope you can handle it. I'm just saying.
John, seriously,
yes.
Though.
Yes.
Cheery as your show has been so far, what is Chip Roy fucking doing? He was a lock and he didn't have anyone to... What is he doing?
What do you mean, what's he doing? What's he doing now?
Why is he quitting?
Why is
you mean Ken Buck? You got your Chip Roys and your Ken Bucks.
Yeah,
oh, my Ken
Bucks.
I'm sorry. My Ken Bucks.
No,
I'm
no,
sorry.
It's okay, because they're both
confused.
they're both attacking their party in different ways. Chip Roy's attacking them for not being crazy right-wing racist enough, and Democrats are taking his speeches and using them in ads. But, you know, Ken Buck said, this place keeps going downhill. Mike Johnson's ability to talk me into staying here is going to be as successful as his ability to, of talking me into unconstitutional impeachments. It was pretty pointed.
You actually answered my question. Remember when I asked you the question, like, why do some people say they have like a 5-vote majority and then, but it comes down to like 2 votes or whatever? You answered that earlier. So it's just who's available to vote.
I mean, they have the numbers still, but they can't have anybody out sick. But Ken Buck, let me quote him again. He said, we've taken impeachment and we've made it a social media issue. I mean, that's the sharpest take I've heard from anybody. And Ken Buck's a Republican. It's not just that he's leaving. He's making a lot of noise as he leaves. And he's sort of given an advantage to anyone not named Lauren Boebert, because now she can't run in the special election because she already occupies a seat. So another person is going to be elected to serve out Ken Buck's term, and then Lauren Boebert will be voted out from her own seat. So this is, I think, one of the reasons why maybe he said he's going to resign next week at the end of the day. But also, you know, there may be something else going on here we don't know about that might show up in the next few days. Chris?
And weirdly, John, I don't know if you did, you just mention it, the special election is going to be in June.
Yeah.
It's going to be when their primary is. So, I mean, that's they're going to be for months without a replacement for that seat.
Yeah.
Months.
I mean, he's really kneecapping his own party. And again, people are reading a lot into it in terms of Lauren Boebert. But he said not too long ago, I am not going to lie on behalf of my presidential candidate, on behalf of my party. I mean, he's really walking the walk more than Mitt Romney could. I almost feel like he could do more good staying in Congress. But, you know, we be more or less next week will be one seat closer to Speaker Hakeem Jeffries. That's the story here.
Damn, that's crazy. I'm so excited. I'm a happy girl tonight. Everyone should be happy, happy, happy. I'm sorry that COVID killed all those people. I'm sorry the Republicans are still douches. But, you know, we're getting somewhere. Oh, I was going to tell you.
I agree with you, by the way. By the way, can I just say, I think in such a dark, negative time that joy is in many ways an act of resistance. And so I think people should be as happy as they possibly can. But being happy doesn't mean being stupid. If you can be happy and be aware of this culture of sewage in D.C., God bless you. That's the way to go.
I know. Before you go, though, I have one last quick thing. I used your thing today about I'd rather have a president with that needs a nap.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd rather have the guy who needs a nap instead of the one who needs a defense attorney.
Yes.
How'd it go?
Or, you know, has 4 indictments. It went very well. I think I got one. So yay us. Woo.
Right on. Thank you so much. OK.
Bye.
Thank you, Vic. What a pleasure. Thanks so much, Lisa. 866-997-GRIT. Let me go to Al, who is calling from the beautiful, wonderful state of North Carolina. Hello, Al. Welcome. You're on Progress. Good evening.
Hey, first time listener. I just scrolled across here and found you, and pretty intellectually stimulating stuff. I got to say that.
This show is intellectually stimulating. This show is intellectually stimulating. What parts of North Carolina are you dwelling in, sir? We're my God.
Yeah, it's a product of living out here in coastal Carolina. But I got to tell you, I'm a recovering Democrat, so I've been a long time independent. Forgive me for that, but
I'm an independent too. I've never belonged to a party. Go ahead.
Well, I am just so baffled by the GOP that are just Trump supporters. I can't wrap my head around, and I have some good friends. They're all white. Of course, that just don't see any wrong. They don't see the convictions. They don't see the unethical behavior, all the coziness to Russia. They just can't see that. And I just wanted your take, because I'm thinking, you know, first time listener, maybe I'm going to hear something that will give me some solace that this is just not going to happen.
I think it's a cult. And in many cases, I think it's a cult of unmanly obedience. But more often, I think it's a cult of people going with the flow. And authoritarianism is very popular among a certain kind of people. A certain kind of man really likes the idea of a strong man rather than a democratic republic. It's very seductive to many types of humans. to have the charismatic strongman ruler instead of a Democratic Republican form of government. And so I'm not surprised when people go for it. I am surprised that people can be so suckered by such a shitty con man as Donald Trump, a man who stole from veterans with a fraudulent online university. But he really does something no other president has done. He appeals to the worst in people and validates the worst in people. Every president, even George W. Bush, who I think was in many ways a worse president than Trump, but everyone, they all appeal to the better angels of our nature. They talk about how good we can be as a people. Donald Trump's never done that. He's more or less said, hey, folks, look at me. I'm a big freaking asshole, and you can be too, and that's just fine. And that's really seductive to people who don't want to hear all these liberals talking about how much better we could be if we looked out for the least of us. And again, the biggest reason to me is, if you want to know my biggest reason why Trump won, it's why Republicans keep winning, which is that we have replaced the teachings of Jesus with criminalizing abortion, which Jesus never talked about. They have taken away all of those intensely liberal teachings of the Jesus they pretend to follow. Welcome the stranger. Individuals and nations must care for the poor and the sick. Pay your damn taxes. Don't execute people. He who lives by the sword will die by the sword. That kind of liberal highfalutin talk is hard to live up to. And it's much more seductive to just think, oh, Jesus wants to put women in jail for killing innocent babies. And the Bible's not against abortion. Judaism isn't. Jesus never mentioned it. But we've had a 40-year plus program in this country of replacing everything Jesus talked about with criminalizing abortion, which the Bible's not against. And it's really seductive. It's really simple. People think that's what Christianity is. The media has helped with this. And I think when Donald Trump promised to end abortion, that's all it takes for millions of Americans. They don't care that he's the opposite of everything Jesus ever talked about because they don't read the Bible they claim to follow. It's kind of dark, but that's the clearest example I can give you. Criminalizing abortion has replaced the teachings of Christ for conservative Christianity.
Well, I find this,
I bet you thought I was going to have a dick joke or something, but that's my number one reason.
No, but you've gained a fan, and I don't put anything to coincidence as I scrolled across and just listened to you.
Oh, God bless. Thank you.
A couple of statements, but you have a fan, and I appreciate what you're saying.
I'm so honored. But thank you. You got a fan here. Please call anytime and let us know how things are going in North Carolina. I'm rooting for your state. I really am.
Yeah, so am I. I hope this purple does turn blue. All right. God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye.
What a great pleasure. We are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Let me get one more quick call, and then I want to bring in Reverend Barry because I've been dying to talk to this man. I just want to clear the boards a bit. Let me please go to Vicki in Arizona. Hi, Vicki. You've been on hold forever. Welcome.
Hi, John. I just want to say I love the way you started the show. I was just clapping and saying amen, amen.
Thank you.
But I wondered, why don't we ever talk about when Trump put those kids in cages?
I talk about it.
We don't talk about it anymore.
Oh, I talk about it. Family separation, because there's still over 500 children that haven't been reunited with their family. You know why? Because Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions, let's not forget this was his first attorney general's idea, they never had a plan or any system in place to ever return these children to their families. And we talk about this on this show a lot with Simon and Julie when we do our Indigenous Voices segment every week, when we talk about the residential schools where Indian children were stolen and placed to turn them white. They did the same thing in this decade and in this century with the children of migrants. And there's still literally hundreds not reunited. It's not, you know, they'll say, well, Obama built the cages. Well, that's true. But he didn't separate the children. And that's the difference. He didn't steal children and put them in cages by themselves.
Yeah, I just kind of wondered. It never hits the media or anything. Like, you don't see it on any TV when they're talking about Donald Trump and how bad he is. It's like we forgot that. Like, you know,
they're brown people, aren't they? They're brown people. Go ahead.
I think that it's because it's so horrible that people don't even want to think about it. It's almost too and I want to say evil, but it's too disgusting to even think about that we could perpetrate something like that.
No, you know what's too disgusting to think about?
And because it's not just Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions. It's everybody in Customs and Border Patrol, everybody that was involved in ICE at the time, everybody that took a child and separated physically from their parents, and then no one wrote down a name or you know, anything. No one decided to keep records on this. Like, that's a willing choice. You don't have thousands of people just go like, we forgot.
Yeah, like, but again, I gotta say, it was in September of 2020 that we found out that our government was forcing hysterectomies on migrant women. Literally, I mean, we did this. This is Hitler grade levels of evil that we were literally having forced involuntary hysterectomies on migrant women legally seeking asylum. As horrific as the family separation plan was, this is equally horrific. And in many ways, it's so grotesque. It's like we all tried to forget about it. I mean, forced hysterectomies in this century. And the media covered it for like 2 days and then dropped it. To me, that is something Democrats should run on hardcore. But again, they've spent decades trying to dehumanize asylum seekers and migrants by calling them illegals. And they've done such a good job. We don't think they are people. We call them illegals, even though if you're standing on American soil, you are legally entitled to claim asylum. This is our law. We have a whole freaking statue in the harbor here in New York saying this. So, you know, I'm with you. But again, I think you're both right. I think people are just, it was so horrific. We don't want to think about it. And we got to think about it because they stole children as a deterrent. Both Stephen Miller and Jeff Sessions said they were stealing children to discourage migrants from crossing. And then they forced women who did cross and declared they wanted asylum to have their insides ripped out. It's monstrous.
Wow.
Yeah. By the way, I'll be opening with this material on the Sexy Liberal Tour starting next month in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's going to be great. I'll attach some funny parts by then. But this is our country. This was our justice system under Trump. And again, I think Democrats, you don't have to humanize them, but you can come out and talk about the stealing children and the forced hysterectomies and people will be repulsed by it. And it won't make it seem like you're in favor of open borders. But that's why Democrats are such cowards on this issue, I think, because anyone who talks about treating these people like they're people gets accused of being open borders. Forced sterilization. I mean, we did it to women in Puerto Rico a couple generations ago. Still doing it this century. On that note, did she hang up?
No,
you've just stunned her into silence.
I'll just end with this, John, and then
please.
I'll hang up.
Please.
When you said this is a cult, I call it a cult all the time.
Amen.
And the one cult I think about was Jim Jones, and I said, you know what? These people are going to drink the Kool-Aid too, but they're
yeah. But you know my favorite joke about that.
Is not going to make them just lay down and go to sleep and die. These idiots are going to pick up guns and stuff, and it's going to be horrendous. But
it is
every definition of a cult. Have a good day, John. Keep doing
Thank
the good
you, love.
Work.
You're wonderful. But before you go, let me tell you my favorite joke about this. I didn't write it, but they say, you know the difference between Donald Trump and Jim Jones? Donald Trump would charge his cult members for the Kool-Aid. Thank you so much for the call. 866-997-GRIT. Yes, Chris?
I was saying cult 45.
There you go. Reverend Barry Lynn is an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. He served as executive director for Americans United for the Separation of Church and State until his retirement a couple years back. He's a longtime activist and a hero civil liberties lawyer. You've seen him on PBS NewsHour, The Today Show, 60 Minutes, even The O'Reilly Factor, and he's been published everywhere from the LA Times to The Nation to The Wall Street Journal. Reverend Barry's memoir is called Paid to Piss People Off. You've got to get it. It comes in three volumes, Peace, Porn, and Prayer. All three are wonderful. Barry, it is so good to welcome you back to SiriusXM.
It is nice to be back, John. Very nice to be back.
As long as we're on the subject, I mean, you know, I don't know your thoughts on it, but it seems like a smart Democratic Party would remind us of these horrors, that children still haven't been returned to their families, that we were forcibly sterilizing women without telling them. These women didn't speak English. No. And this is the policies of Donald Trump. And yet, as our caller indicated, we've got a short memory in this country.
Yeah, we have a very short memory, but I think you're right. These are the kinds of issues that need to come up over and over again. When you have so much time on cable television to fill, why do you need to have the same people on making the same arguments over and over again? In retirement, I didn't think I'd sit around too often and watch television, but I actually do. And when you watch it and you see the same, what's called B-roll, you know, the kind of the stuff they take pictures of it that don't have comments in them, the same ones you see at 9 o'clock in the morning are the same ones you see at 9 o'clock at night. And the people are the same people. So you have former prosecutors, former mayors, former everything, and they all just say the same thing repeatedly. And in some cases, they lie, but you keep getting put on. Case in point, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu.
Oh, that brave truth teller?
Used to be on CNN. He was an example, as CNN often does, of a kind of a responsible, old-fashioned Republican.
Oh,
what does he do
right.
4 days ago? Announces in a radio interview he will be supporting Donald Trump in November. So
I mean, I was never fooled by that guy, Barry. I was never fooled by Chris Sununu for a second.
No, you shouldn't have been, and you weren't. Others were.
Well, let's talk about fooling people, Barry, because our old friend Robert Kennedy Jr. is still running. Yeah. He's going for the Joe Rogan dude bro belt. And he announced today publicly that he was considering who his VP running mates might be and that he had a couple of finalists in mind. And he decided to tell the world two of the names he's considering and told us he's told these two men he's considering them. And those men are, of course, anti-vaccination quarterback Aaron Rodgers and former Minnesota governor and friend of this show, Jesse the Body Ventura. Your thoughts, Reverend, on what's happened to third parties? We've gone from Lincoln as a third party candidate to Nader and now to this.
Yeah, well, I used to have Jesse Ventura on my radio shows when I
love him.
He's
a great talker.
Yeah,
he's
a wonderful talker and I think a good person. I mean, I think he has some quirky ideas. I would be surprised if RFK got an affirmative response from Jesse the Body Ventura that said, sure, I'd love to do that. But there are still, in poll after poll, 15% or more of voters in three-way races, Biden, Trump, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., that's enough support in polls to get you into a presidential debate if the presidential debate organization doesn't change the rules. So he'd be up there, and he is shocked. I think he says he's not an anti-vaxxer. That is total nonsense. He's been an anti-vaxxer. He still is an anti-vaxxer. And
he's been vaccinated himself and his wife and kids, too.
Yeah, well,
so he's the best kind of anti-vaxxer.
a hypocrite. Hypocrites are so good at everything. They're pro-life, they say, but then they want to execute everybody.
Preach, Reverend.
They can possibly see. But I'll tell you, people don't look hard enough at the way that he is getting funding. RFK Jr. is getting all kinds of right-wing money given to his American Values Political Action Committee. $7 trillion is what that group spent on that one Super Bowl ad that caused a lot of consternation.
Barry? I think you mean $7 million.
$7 million. $7 million. And most of that money came from right-wing, normally Republican donors, and they're still giving it. And then when you look at the celebrities, you know, his wife is a Hollywood star. But when you look at the other Hollywood people that have given money to him, it's people like Rob Schneider. Remember him?
Of course I do.
great comedian, not a great comedian. And then Eric Clapton, who may be a fine guitarist, but has become a nut over the last 5 years.
Sadly,
he's given...
Yes.
according to the last report I saw from the RFK Jr. Folks, he gave him $5,000.
Eric Stephen Clapton. Stills, by the way, was on stage with them at that event, and Stephen had to distance himself from it and had to come out and say, I don't endorse. I'm a Biden voter. Yep. I don't endorse RFK.
Yep. But I mean, this is the kind of thing people are looking for, a difference. This is what people say they want. We're tired of Biden. He's too old. We're tired of Trump. He's too old. And he's got all kinds of legal trouble. We need a new voice. Maybe you do. This is not the year to figure out who the new voice is. And it sure as hell isn't Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
But it's not about a new voice, Barry. You're right. It's about kneecapping Biden in seven swing states and nothing else.
Exactly. And more of these third party candidates or people running as independents are getting on the ballots. You know, it's very difficult to get on the ballots. When Ralph Nader first tried it, he got a couple of extra states to allow. At that time, I think he was running on the Green for the Green Party nomination.
Yes, sir, he was.
But I want to admit this. I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000 because I lived in Washington, D.C. And I figured my vote literally doesn't. I knew Ralph, and I thought I might as well vote for him because in D.C.
I voted for him in 96.
Yeah. But you know who else I voted for? Dick Gregory in 1968. Wow. Because I was looking at the. This is the Vietnam War. This is this controversial. This is the centerpiece of my political being. And I didn't believe Richard Nixon had a secret plan. And I didn't think Hubert Humphrey had a plan either. And I was so disgusted. I was in college at the time. I thought, I'm going to vote for Dick Gregory. I'd heard him give a speech. I had never met him at the time. And I thought, I'm going to vote for him. And I did. But to this day, I'm disappointed that I voted for either one.
That you voted for Ralph or Dick Gregory?
Yeah, because I think it was a kind of arrogance on my part that said, it doesn't matter what my vote means or doesn't mean. I'm going to vote for the people who believe as I do. And I did believe, and I certainly, when
That's
Dick Gregory...
arrogance.
Well, it's a kind of a... It's taking yourself a bit too seriously, thinking that you're voting and
let me ask you this, Reverend. First off, I'm jealous because I wasn't even conceived yet in 1968, so I never had a chance to vote for Dick Gregory. But what state did you vote for Dick Gregory in? Because my point is, I got nothing against third parties. Lincoln was a third party president, and he won the White House with 38% of the vote, our first Republican. My problem is people in swing states, usually men without uteruses, Barry, who vote third party. If you're in a safe blue state or a big red state, it doesn't bother me. But if you're in Wisconsin, if you're in Arizona, North Carolina, if you're in Pennsylvania, what the hell are you doing voting third party? It's a vote for Trump.
But I was in Pennsylvania in 1968.
You monster.
Yeah, I know. Thank you for addressing me in an appropriate fashion. No, but I mean, but I was so, you know, he's so angry. I had been at every peace march. I used to go to Washington and New York. I was in college in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. We had protests there. It was so important. And I just didn't believe that Hubert Humphrey would do the right thing.
Yeah.
And maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't, but I'm embarrassed that I voted for Dick Gregory living in Pennsylvania. If I'd have lived in D.C. at the time, no problem. But you hear the same thing today. When you hear other third party candidates say, this is the time, Jill Stein said the other day in Wisconsin, this is the time for a third party. No, this is not the time for a third party. This is
And she
the
said it in
most-
Wisconsin.
Yeah, in Wisconsin, and she is on the ballot there, and she is going to draw some votes. And unlike Ralph Nader, who probably, I've talked to Ralph several times about this, and I kind of believe he's right. He did not cost Al Gore the election.
I never thought so.
No, I didn't think so. And there have been all kinds of scholarly studies for the last decade and a half over whether he did or didn't have that impact. And
I think 90,000 people in Florida who knew they were a battleground state and voted for Ralph anyway, they cost Al Gore the election. I don't blame Ralph for it.
Yeah. You know, I was in Tennessee right after the election, and I was talking to a lot of groups, and I always talked to Republican groups. There were log cabin Republican groups. I'd speak to them. I'd speak to any group that wanted me. And I spoke to a big Democratic group in Tennessee. And as soon as I was finished, some guy stood up and he said, there's one reason Al Gore did not win his own state. And that's because he didn't invite Bill Clinton here, not once. If he had brought Bill down here, it would have changed everything. I don't know if it would have changed everything. But the fact that Al Gore was afraid to bring Bill Clinton to his home state, that's bad, bad thinking. Yep.
Barry, do you think banning in vitro fertilization is going to be a winning issue for Republicans at this point? It really seems like the Alabama Supreme Court did what they did, and it's terrified most of the Republican Party because most of them realize what a loser that issue is.
They do, and it should be brought up constantly, because if frozen embryos are children, then aren't all embryos children? And isn't that exactly what Nikki Haley wanted when she was in the state legislature in South Carolina? The golden globe of anti-abortion movements is to make sure that all fetuses are defined as persons under the Constitution. Because if that's true, then a state can't, let's just legalize. You can't legalize murder. And if fetuses are people, you can't legalize abortion either. And this is the thing. And of course, Nikki Haley, I mean, to her credit, which I rarely want to give, she, of course, had her son through, it was not in vitro fertilization, it was artificial insemination. But I do wonder, why not go further? I'll never forget one of the counsels for the House Judiciary Committee telling me once at lunch, he said, you know, if they get their way, they're going to prohibit erections. Because, I mean, when you think about it, but there's nothing crazier than this position that all these tens of thousands of frozen embryos from women who desperately want to have a child or two, but know that they've got extra eggs, extra embryos being frozen. That's what George Bush called the test tube babies. And he wanted to protect them. But most members of the Republican Party in the Senate, in fact, have already endorsed the idea of fetal personhood. They're record. They're on record. And they don't want to talk about it, but Democrats ought to talk about it all the time. They say, this is how extreme it is. If Democrats really wanted to get elected, not just in the presidency, but in the Senate and the House elections coming up, they would not be embarrassed about going after these ridiculous ideas Republicans have. No problem.
Reverend, I have so much I want to talk to you about. I'm so glad you're back on the show. We have to take a very quick break.
Sure.
When we come back, I'd like to talk with you about today's hearing on the non-prosecution of Biden by Special Counsel Hur. And I want to get your thoughts on the Oscars as well. Can you stick around? Okay,
absolutely.
We'll be right back with the Reverend Barry Lynn. And you blasphemers are welcome to call in. We're at 866-997-4748. We'll be right back. This is Progress.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Taking your calls at 866-997-GRIT. We are talking with the Reverend Barry Lynn, former executive director for Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Barry, I want to bring in a caller into this, if I may. Jessica is on the line from Oregon. And Jessica, welcome. You're on with Reverend Barry. How are you tonight?
Oh, hello, John. Hello, sir. You're one of my heroes on this show. I'm so glad I called on a night that you're here. So my first to the Oscars, really quickly, Michael Keaton really needs to play Batman in his own movie again.
Yes.
That was amazing.
Yes, so I agree.
My thought is how do the Republicans and government officials deal with the ramifications of making personhood at the time of conception, because that is going to change the months and age ramifications of an individual if that is the case.
You're the lawyer, Barry.
No. I mean, the idea is if a fertilized egg is a person, then shouldn't you be able to take that person off as a dependent on your income tax? Right. But remember, for Republicans, they don't care because they're anti-tax. So if you can find a way to prohibit any kind of abortion, even of a fetus, then give them tax credits too, and that'll be good. Now, in some states, actually, it is more illegal if you're in a traffic accident and you're a pregnant woman and the fetus is in fact killed in that traffic accident. You can be, in a few states, charged with two vehicular homicides. How's that for goofiness?
Wow. I mean, if you have a frozen embryo for 18 years, can the embryo vote, Barry? That's my question. At 21 years, can your frozen embryo buy a beer? I mean, it seems like that's what they're arguing.
It is what they're arguing. But if you ask them that, you know, as I've said on this show many times, you cannot out-argue people who don't start with a good premise of knowing how to argue. If you quote a Bible verse, they quote another one. If you say, well, wait a minute, Jesus said this, and then they go, well, wait a minute, in one of the Gospels it says, Jesus said, I have come not to change one word of the law. So, of course, you should feed your recalcitrant children, just like Exodus says.
Well, these people, I think,
go ahead, Jessica.
I was going to say, I think there was actually a case where a under 21-year-old got caught drinking, and they used this time frame rule in their favor to try and get around it. And I don't remember how that went out, like how it ended up. But I mean, where's the? Think about that. That's craziness.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know that case, but I'll look it up.
I heard this a while ago. I heard this a while ago that a guy was 20 years and 6 months and said, but my life began as a fetus. So really, you know, I mean, and that, so you should be able to drink at 20 years, 3 months. I mean, that's exactly. It's their logic, not mine. Jessica, thank you so much for the call. But Barry, I want to bring it back stateside and ask you about the Robert Hur hearings today. Republicans were really angry that he didn't find any crimes Biden committed. Democrats were really angry that he had lied about Biden forgetting his son's death and a bunch of other issues. What did you think?
I don't think this was the best day for Republicans or Democrats or even for special counsel Hur. I wish that our pals like Adam Schiff and Congressman Johnson from Georgia hadn't used the inflammatory rhetoric against Hur. Here's what Adam Schiff said. He says to Hur, your comments about Biden's mental state was a gratuitous effort to disparage Biden. And Johnson basically said, all you want to do is reelect Trump because you're a registered Republican. I don't think that helps. We know that Matt Gaetz is going to say stupid things like, well, Biden's like an elevator that can't get to the top floor. We expect that from jerks like that. But I think our side should have been just a little more use of decorum in saying what Hur did was wrong. Now, here's my problem with her. When I testified before the Judiciary Committee, which I did many, many, many times, I would never think of not knowing exactly what the most important and in some cases most inflammatory things I could say in my 3 to 5 minutes. I don't think that her was under a time constraint. He might have been. But he should have said from the beginning, it is important to remember, you have to prove to a jury that there was a willful removal of classified documents. And here's why I don't think Mr. Biden, then Vice President Biden, I don't think he acted in a willful manner. We can't prove that. Instead, mm-hmm. he makes what I think is, frankly, a pretty weak argument. He says, well, you know, if we took this to a jury, they might just see him as a what phrase did he use here? I wrote it down. A gentleman who has severe memory problems.
Yeah,
that's not what you do as a prosecutor. You don't decide that you don't kind of add a layer of complexity and say, you know, if we did prosecute, well, we wouldn't get a conviction. And Alan Dershowitz, who I used to consider a friend until he really, really has gone off the deep end. But I have to say, he said today on a cable show, it is absolutely irresponsible for a prosecutor to try to predict what a jury is going to do. And he said, take this. Let's say you have an African-American defendant in a predominantly African-American city. Do you say, well, you're not going to prosecute this guy because, you know, there'll be a juror or two who will be black and he's black. And so why bother? And I honestly think her should not be using this argument constantly, because the average person who does believe more than I do even in the jury system thinks, let the juries make up their own mind and spell out in advance what it means to have a willful removal of classified material.
I completely respect what you're saying, and I think the Democrats' goal today, and I think they largely achieved it, but it was to say that, you know, Biden's not on trial, Trump is on trial, and that's because these two cases are incredibly different.
Absolutely. And when Democrats did that, and they stuck to that, and Jerry Nadler stuck to that, those were the most effective points. And that's what you need to do going into the election. Don't say, he wouldn't have been convicted anyway. Don't do that. Just say, Trump, well, it's a different set of facts, but it's worse, and spell it out. And they did. Nadler did.
Congressman Nadler, let me quote him. He said he was talking about Jack Smith's case against Trump, and he said they were concerned Trump had lied about possession of those documents and that he might conceal or destroy them. Special counsel Jack Smith found that Trump obstructed his investigation by suggesting his attorney falsely represent to the FBI and grand jury that Trump didn't have the documents called for by the grand jury subpoena. Nadler then said, you agree that causing someone to lie to the FBI is a classic example of obstruction of justice? And Hur said it is an example of obstruction. He literally made the Republican special counsel admit that Trump committed a crime.
Yes, he did. Jerry is sometimes understated, but when he's on, and he certainly was today, he made all the points. And making that distinction in the light of, you know, public debate for the next 7.5 months, make it all the time. There's no comparison between the obfuscation, the efforts to conceal evidence that Donald Trump did, and whatever might have happened, and the placement of the documents at issue. Joe Biden did not put them in his bathroom. He didn't scatter them on the floor. He had them in a garage somewhere. And diaries, the other thing that they talk about, diaries, by not explaining that what a diary does and does not contain, he allows the Republicans to say, wait a minute, he's got an advantage. He took those because he was writing a book and he wanted to talk about what he did with his ghostwriter. And that's nonsense to begin with. But I mean, it's for the average person listening. First of all, no average person listened to the entirety of this hearing, but which dragged on into the afternoon. I wasn't even there. I was taking my hike of the day. But you simply have to make it clear that the distinctions are real, they are important, and in our country with a rule of law, you can't break all the laws that Donald Trump did and get away with it. It's different from anything Joe Biden's ever done.
Okay, Reverend, here's what I want to do, because I'd feel incomplete spiritually and as a man if I didn't get your take on the Oscars. You are all our right. unofficial yeah. film reviewer, Reverend. You are like God because you see everything. And if God sees everything, does that mean he has to watch Madam Web? That's my question. We caught up with Barry fresh off the red carpet for his exclusive inside scoop on this year's Academy Awards. God, I used to do shows where people talk like that. Yeah, Barry, what did you think of the overall awards and the show and the winners?
I think in general, I was happy with the show. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel is already being attacked for making a reference for the length of the film
Killers of the Flower Moon,
because it was 3.5 hours long. As I said to you when I first saw the film, Martin Scorsese said, well, you know, it's not that long. I mean, you go to a play and it's long. Yeah, but you go to a play and it has something called an intermission. And
yeah,
you can
I remember.
Leave, but this you can't.
I know.
But what I was deeply disturbed about and wrote about on Facebook and got a lot of pushback for is I said on Facebook that the film Zone of Interest was nominated for Best Picture, Best International Film, and I said I hope it didn't win anything. I got more pushback on that than I ever do for a
Facebook
me too.
Post.
But here's the problem. The most impressive and powerful Holocaust film I have ever seen was a documentary made in 1956 by a French filmmaker. It's called Night and Fog, and it's often pops up on the Criterion Channel. When I was a high school teacher a long, long time ago, I used to show it to my students, and it's breathtaking. It's just images. They're so powerful. Night and Fog.
Yes, it's amazing. I've seen it.
But then you see some others, like The Pawnbroker, which I saw when I was in high school, 1964. Rod Steiger plays a survivor of the Holocaust who's now running a pawn shop in New York City. But he can't get away from his despair over the fact that his children and his wife were killed in the death camps. It's such a powerful movie.
Now, many great films about the Holocaust. It's its own genre in and of itself. And even a film like Life is Beautiful, where they try to make where they pulled off having comedy in a concentration camp film. I mean, it's always interesting seeing how different directors try to interpret it. So tell me your issue with Zone of Interest.
Well, I think Zone of Interest needs to make a point, and I think it needs to make a point not to people whose relatives died in the Holocaust. I mean, that's horrible, but I think it needs to be open to people who don't know much about World War II, who don't even know who the protagonists were. And I think if you watch Zone of Interest and you see these obscure, you hear sounds and you see smoke rising and you hear some of the characters talking about how they're trying on the coats of the Jews, it's not clear enough. If you want to find a message that's going to hit not just adults but also high school students, Holocaust studies is one of the things that Steven Spielberg did, because he was when he showed Schindler's List in a inner city high school, people were laughing at it. And he was so appalled, as he should have been, that he formed a nonprofit to do Holocaust education. We don't have Holocaust education. We barely have any historical education of the 20th century. And if you can take a film and show not just the horrors, but also that you can do something that is heroic. You don't even have to be a Jew. I mean, Schindler was not even Jewish, which is one of the criticisms of the movie when it first came out. But if you don't do that, if you say, here's this terrible thing that happened, and you have to let people know there's something to do. There is something to do. When Hannah Arendt talked about, during the Eichmann trial, the banality of evil, I've never bought that idea, not about Eichmann, who knew exactly what he was doing. And Rudolf Hess, who's the hero, the main figure here, he was a Nazi back long before they set up concentration camps when Hitler
was I thought this film was about. I thought this film was about the banality of evil. I agree with you that on a storytelling level, it doesn't work because there's no protagonist. There's no one to root for the whole movie. But to me, I would not, and I also agree, I would not recommend this as anybody's first Holocaust movie. You're not going to learn a lot. You'll be very confused. No. This is a film for people who already know of the Shoah, who know how the systemic execution of Jews was carried out, who know what Auschwitz was, and having it be on the outside of the wall where you just hear what goes on behind the wall but never see it. I found it to be horrific and gripping, and it made me view this atrocity in a whole different way. But again, in terms of entertainment, I'll agree it doesn't have a protagonist. They're all dicks, yes, but I nonetheless found it a very original take on this atrocity.
It is an original take, but I just don't think it's a perfectly good one. I think it's a flawed one because, you know, when I used to...
Did you see Society of Snow, Reverend?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, yeah. And that's a day movie.
Society of Snow is a marvelous film.
Yeah.
And almost nobody saw it, but it is streaming somewhere already. And it's worth seeing. It's about the crash in the Andes of this rugby team.
Yeah.
Where cannibalism is involved. But nevertheless, I thought that was very well done. Much better than Alive, the film based directly on the book Alive.
I agree.
It's great. Reverend, best international picture.
Well, I think there's probably a lot of folks who would agree with you, and I will agree. If I had to choose for a date movie, the Cannibalism in the Hills or the Holocaust movie where you don't see the Holocaust, maybe the cannibalism is better for a first date. Reverend, how do our listeners follow you and keep up with all your many doings?
You can follow me on BarryWLynn.com. I update it pretty regularly, and it's got podcasts about my book, Paid to Piss People Off, and I think we're going into a second printing of it. And,
yay!
But you can buy it. You can get it anywhere, but some places are better than others.
I agree. Reverend, you are the best. Please come back and see us very, very soon. And thank you so much for joining us.